From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, President Trump's doctrine to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it. What does it mean for the Texas economy, and how practical is it to build that wall? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In his first week in the Oval Office, Donald Trump fast-tracked his main campaign promise. Here he is in May of 2016, campaigning in Phoenix.
Build that wall. 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 Build that wall.
Now that Trump won the Electoral College and became president, he's moving forward. On Wednesday, he signed executive orders to begin construction of the wall and called for a newly expanded deportation force to arrest, detain, and expel unauthorized immigrants with criminal records.
I just signed two executive orders that will save thousands of lives, millions of jobs, and billions of dollars. These two orders are part of an immigration reform we outlined during the campaign. I want to emphasize that we will be working in partnership with our friends in Mexico to improve safety and economic opportunity on both sides of the border. I have deep admiration for the people of Mexico, and I greatly look forward to meeting again with the President of Mexico. We'll be doing that shortly. The Secretary of Homeland Security, working with myself and my staff, will begin immediate construction of a border wall. So badly needed. You folks know how badly needed it is as a help, but very badly needed. This will also help Mexico by deterring illegal immigration from Central America and by disrupting violent cartel networks. As I've said repeatedly to the country, we are going to get the bad ones out, the criminals and the drug deals and gangs and gang members and cartel leaders. The day is over when they can stay in our country and wreak havoc. We are going to get them out, and we're going to get them out fast, and John Kelly is going to lead that way. Our order also does the following. Ends the policy of catch and release at the border. Requires other countries to take back their criminals. They will take them back. Cracks down on sanctuary cities, empowers ICE officers to target and remove those who pose a threat to public safety, calls for the hiring of another 5,000 Border Patrol officers, calls for the tripling the number of ICE officers. For years, the media has largely ignored the stories of Americans and lawful residents victimized by open borders. To all of those hurting out there, I repeat to you these words. We hear you, we see you, and you will never, ever be ignored again.
Trump and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto were due to meet in Washington, D.C. to discuss the future of the North American Free Trade Agreement. But on Thursday, Peña Nieto canceled that meeting in reaction to the wall order. Here's Trump reacting to that.
The President of Mexico and myself have agreed to cancel our planned meeting scheduled for next week. Unless Mexico is going to treat the United States fairly, with respect, such a meeting would be fruitless, and I want to go a different route. We have no choice.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer told reporters on Air Force One Thursday that Trump was considering a 20% tax on imports from Mexico in order to pay for the border wall.
If you think about what a border tax on imports from countries like Mexico that we have a huge trade deficit does, that's really going to provide the funding.
Hours after that announcement, the White House appeared to be walking back that 20% tariff talk. I spoke with Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar about the situation. He represents the Texas border district that covers San Antonio to Laredo and has been instrumental in past negotiations with Mexico regarding trade, the drug war, and immigration.
He's misleading the American public by saying that, and I'll tell you why. Since last year, I've been talking to Kevin Brady, who's the chairman of Ways and Means, and he's been talking about tax reform. And one of the things, one of the components to help lower corporate tax rates, individual tax rates, is to come up with extra money so they get rid of some deductions. And one of the things that he brings there, he talks about, is to have a border adjustment tax. Which basically means that, according to Mr. Brady, there are about 103 countries in the world that have some form of border adjustment, including Mexico and including so many other countries except for the United States. So this is basically one that would affect all imports from all countries with no exceptions, and it's not targeted to Mexico. This is the way that Mr. Trump is misleading the American public. This is the way that he knows, and I'm giving the benefit that he knows what he's talking about, that this applies to everybody. So he's trying to save face because he knows that Peña Nieto is not going to pay for this wall. It's going to be the American taxpayers. Either we go in a deficit or we find the money somewhere or we take the money away from some other program. But it's going to be the American taxpayer that's going to end up paying this. So the way he's going to save face is to look at an idea that the Republicans have been talking about since last year, and I've been involved in some of those conversations, and he is just quite honestly misleading the American public. So he's not slapping Mexico with no 20% tax. It is something that applies to every single country. And it's not even his idea. This is an idea that Kevin Brady and the Republicans have been talking for a while. The Koch brothers don't like this idea. The manufacturers don't like this. The retailers don't like this. Some of the oil and gas people don't like this. And I know because some of those people have been in my office since last year. But to say that this is a way to pay for the wall, very misleading. And I'll say that with all due respect to Mr. Trump.
President Trump is also talking about cutting off all U.S. aid to Mexico. As you know, Congressman Cuellar, since you were very much involved in the in dealing with U.S. help for dealing with the drug war in Mexico, does that include that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In this executive order, if you look at it, it really doesn't do much because it's all congressional requests that have to be made. Which he could have just called his Secretary of Homeland and say, "Hey, make this request to the Congress." But in there, he does call for a review to see how much money we've given Mexico over the last 5 years. Now, I don't know if he's just going to look at Mexico, but if you look at it, Mexico before we did Plan Merida was getting about $36 million a year. One of our most important partners. Then you have countries like Israel that were getting $3.1 billion a year. In fact, I think now they're going to be getting $3.8 billion a year. And I think Mexico's appropriations last year was roughly about $188 million. He's just trying to find a way to save face, to say maybe, you know, we'll cut their appropriation so that, therefore, they can, quote, pay for the wall, and that's their way. He's scrambling to find a creative way to say this is the way the Mexicans are going to pay. Either they cut assistance to Mexico, and by the way, I mean, some of it, for example, is money to the southern border with Mexico, with Guatemala, which means that the Mexicans are stopping some of the people from Central America and other places from coming into the United States. In fact, with $80 million that we provided for the southern border a couple of years ago, did you know that the Mexicans actually stopped more people than the U.S. Border Patrol did over that same period of time? So if he wants to be short-sighted, I think he is going to be short-sighted, but if he wants to be short-sighted, this is the way that he's going to be doing this. If it makes sense that a more secure Mexico is better for the United States, and I think Mr. Trump has an obsession with Mexico. I don't know what that obsession is, but, you know, we got bigger issues out there. Why is he not tweeting Putin, you know, Russia that has more of a serious problem with this, or North Korea, but he's picking on a neighbor to the south that has a 1,954-mile border with us, where every day there is $1.5 billion of trade between the United States? Is he afraid of Putin and not tweeting Putin at 3 o'clock in the morning? Why is he doing this to Peña Nieto in Mexico, when Mexico has been a good neighbor and friend of ours? But for some reason, he has an obsession, and he just won't let go of it. We saw that during the campaign. And for some reason, Mr. Trump is just afraid of letting this go, for some reason on this. So he's just trying to find a creative way to find a way so he can tell the American public, I'm keeping my campaign promise. So I'm either cutting financial aid, which is not a lot, quite honestly, not a lot. And it's to our best interest for the little bit of money that we give Mexico. Like I said, Israel gets $3.8 billion. But he's actually focusing on Mexico, which is wrong.
So what about the wall? Now that Donald Trump says we're going to build the wall, you have a border district. That's going to go on private property. It's going to interfere with farmers in the valley who need to have access to the river. And it is, again, disruptive to the U.S.-Mexico relationship. And it does nothing to deter illegal immigration.
If you look at its executive order, and I ask everybody to look at it, that executive order is just a show. It's a flair, showmanship that he's trying to do here. That's all he's trying to do. On the wall, he's just saying, make a request to Congress. I mean, he's not directing anybody to do this. It's got to be Congress that does this. So if you look at the wall, you're going to have an issue with private property rights, because in Texas, 95% of all the border is on private property. So you're going to have lawsuits over that. You're going to have environmental issues. You have a U.S.-Mexico treaty that says that if you put a structure along the river, you have to adhere to that treaty. So there are so many issues, including the geography. You go to West Texas, and you tell me on the mountains, on the cliffs of West Texas, that you're going to be able to put a wall there. I mean, even Governor Abbott said that, you know, you can't do that in West Texas. So it's a very naive way of addressing an issue, but it's a feel-good. It's a feel-good situation. We all start off with a basic premise, I believe, that we want to secure the border. How we do it, that's how we are going to differ. But a wall is a 14th-century solution that didn't do much for Imperial China, that didn't do very well for the communists there at the Berlin Wall. But again, it's a 14th-century solution to a 21st-century problem that we have.
Is there anything that you're able to do about it then? Do you have communications with Donald Trump? What about the Democratic Party? Are you able to interfere in the process?
Well, if you've seen some of the stories, even the Republicans are being surprised by what he's doing. I mean, sometimes even the Republicans themselves, and I've read story after story where they're even surprised. They don't even know what he's planning to do. Maybe after this Republican caucus where he was meeting with them today, maybe it'll be different for them. But, he's a very unpredictable person. It's very easy to get under his skin. And unfortunately, what we're looking at here is somebody that is not communicating with Congress, is focusing on the wrong targets. Like I said, I mean, Korea, North Korea, Iran, Russia, we got some other bigger issues. But unfortunately, he's concentrating on our neighbor that has, you know, every day we have $1.5 billion of trade, which is more than $1 million of trade every single minute.
So if we get in a trade war with Mexico, how will that impact, you know, your district, San Antonio, Laredo?
Well, first of all, every minute there's over $1 million of trade between the U.S. and Mexico. I would say that if Mexico walks away or the U.S. walks away from NAFTA, Trump will be committing the biggest major foreign policy mistake of the United States in the last two, three decades. It would be a huge mistake if this would happen. But if you look at NAFTA, let's say Mexico walked away instead of the United States. They walk away. You still have the WTO rules of trade. So you still have a structure there that the countries can follow. But like you said, if it's going to be a negative impact, Texas will be the number one state that will be impacted because we got the most trade with them. The city that will be probably most impacted in the whole country will be the city of Laredo because we handle over 40% of all the trade between the U.S. and Mexico. And again, you know, if people would really look at this, the number one destination for U.S. exports is Canada. The number two destination for U.S. exports is Mexico. In the next 5 years, Mexico will surpass Canada, if things don't change, as to receiving the destination of our exports. So that means all the jobs, the 6 million plus jobs that we have, all the things that we create here in the United States, whether it's ag or oil field equipment, computers, whatever it is, all of those things that we're selling, we're telling right now our second largest export destination that we don't care, and we're willing to throw that away. It's just beyond me that he's taking this position. But again, you know, this is what we're expecting from this person. He's our president. I respect the office, but he is a showman, and he is not disappointing any of us.
Congressman Henry Cuellar is a Democrat and represents the region from San Antonio down to the border in Laredo. He warns that President Trump's animus towards Mexico could be costly to the Texas economy. Now that building a border wall is in the works, what will it take to build that structure? Adolfo Matamoros is a Peter T. Flan Distinguished Professor of Civil Engineering at the University of Texas at San Antonio. He's done extensive research in the design and behavior of concrete and steel structures.
I think technologically speaking is a very simple task. That's not to say it's a very cheap task, but you know, engineers, we have the ability to design the panels like he described, precast panels. I think the precast fabricators would be thrilled to get that much work to be done. I think the challenges that I see from the technical point of view stem from the constructions aspects of it, the impact, environmental impacts of the construction. And then, of course, you know, the panels themselves are easy, but they need to be, I think the bigger concern probably would be the foundation, right? Because you're talking about a spread foundation that extends for 1,200 miles over the state of Texas. That's not including the other states. So that's a pretty long stretch, and you're going to encounter a lot of different local conditions as you move along that long a distance.
Well, let's just talk about the materials that you would need for something like that. Do we know how much concrete and steel would be necessary?
People have made estimates of the amount of concrete and steel, yes. They say that it might imply 1% of the production of cement, for example, in the country. So there'll be a significant increase in demand. Ironically, I believe many of the cement manufacturers and the we purchase cement from in the United States, and certainly in Texas, are controlled by Mexican capital. Chunk of that money would be headed to Mexico.
Yeah, Cemex is the Mexican concrete manufacturer, and they are dominant here in the United States.
You're right about that. That is correct, yes. So there would be increased demand for the materials, but I don't think that the demand would be so high that it's unattainable. I think is a manageable quantity.
You're saying that it would be better to build panels off-site and then maybe truck them to the location and then erect them there.
I think it would be very ineffective cost-wise to try to build on-site. But that is not to say that there are no challenges to building a precast wall, because precast manufacturers are very good at doing repetitive tasks, and they're very experienced in manufacturing panels, so that's not a challenge for them, but you have to get these panels to the site, which means that you need access roads to transfer these panels to the border. It might imply maybe not quite building 1,200 miles of access roads, but there will be a significant distance that would have to be constructed for just access to transport these panels and the materials that are needed to the site. And that's a significant challenge, and that certainly would be a very significant part of the cost as well.
This raises so many questions and so many issues. First of all, when you say we're going to build a border wall, and you say we're going to put it on the border, what does that actually mean, on the border? Where is the border? Are we talking about where the Rio Grande meets the land, or what is what?
Well, that's a question that may not have been thought of very carefully. So let's begin from the very beginning, which is who owns the land that the wall is going to be constructed. Never mind if it is right on the edge of the river, or several hundred yards away from it. You have a lot of property owners. If you think of walls that have been built in the past, like the Berlin Wall is a good example, people in East Germany didn't have rights. And so if the government wanted to raise their houses and relocate them, that was just done. But in the United States, there's a legal framework, and there's eminent domain that allows the government to go and seize your property for major piece of infrastructure. But people still have recourses, and they can take that to court. And you're talking about thousands a very large number, to say the least, of landowners. Then, if you set that aside, you're trying to build something on a flood basin, which is never a good idea. There are challenges that will come from the fact that it's a very difficult location, because they go from droughts to floods, and they do that in a split second. And so when there is a drought, the river is the main source of water. I imagine there are people who have livestock that take advantage of that. On the other hand, when you have flood, then every barrier that is built within the flood basin of the river becomes a barrier to that water, and so that means that there be localities that are going to be more prone to flooding because of the presence of a wall.
We've had border fences built. It's not a chain link fence. It's a very substantial barrier
President Trump says, no, he wants a wall. He's been very specific, a solid, concrete wall. Does it make any difference?
That's an interesting question. Well, it certainly makes a difference in the cost.
So once you build the wall, that's done, right? No more worries?
Well,
then you got maintenance.
That's a very good point. In the wall that exists today, in the segment that exists today, they've had significant problems due to flooding in areas that have been severely damaged. On the one hand, it's a very simple structure to build. On the other hand, the fact that you have difficult terrain to work with is going to make it costly. So is the challenge with answering that question is one can build 100 houses one at a time using one company to build them, or one can build 100 houses at the same time. And so the same task would be accomplished in 4 months or 100 times 4 months, depending on how many people you put to work on it. And that, again, would significantly be tied to the cost.
Build the wall. It's such an easy thing to say. You can imagine it in your mind's eye. Oh, a giant wall. That would be great. But you're saying the practicalities of it are much more challenging than many people understand.
I think that's a fair statement, and I think that's something as an engineer that you know, I don't say this. What I'm going to say next is not, I don't say as a politician. I say it as an engineer. If you're going to spend $20 billion in Texas in infrastructure, there are much more worthy projects that I would rather see the money go to, that I think would benefit the state of Texas and the country a great deal more. You know, it could make a very significant difference in our transportation infrastructure, in our ports, in our waterways. You know, in my view, given that the you know, there are a lot of red flags that I see as an engineer. One is a project that is not very clearly defined. It has the potential to end up, when that happens, you know, as an engineer, for example, when I plan a structure, I always try to minimize change orders. So that means you from the beginning, you try to clarify as clearly as possible what it is that you're going to do. Every time something unforeseen happens, costs go up significantly during the construction phase. And so this is a project that is not very clearly defined. The objectives are not clear. In my view, it is likely to end up in significant cost overruns, and has the potential to have a lot of problems.
Adolfo Matamoros is a Peter T. Flan Distinguished Professor of Civil Engineering at the University of Texas at San Antonio. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.